Welcome to Books, Stories, People with me, Nancy Richards. Well, I don't know how many literary festivals there are in South Africa, or indeed around the world, but Darrell Earl David has planned one that's set to be the mother, or perhaps father, of them all. The Madibaland World Literary Festival, scheduled to take place between November the 20th and 30th, is being billed as the biggest book festival in the world. It's a joint venture between the University of the Western Cape, which this year incidentally celebrates its 60th anniversary, and Booktown Richmond, which is said to be the only booktown on the African continent. So who is Darrell Earl David? Well, he's from Howick. He was previously a lecturer in Afrikaans at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and he's currently a lecturer, also in Afrikaans, at the University of the Western Cape. He's been the driving force in starting literary festivals in Howick, in Craddock, in Montague, Pietermaritzburg, as well as the Boek Bedonderd Festival in Richmond. He's also been responsible for establishing a Zulu Literary Museum and in getting Durban declared the UNESCO City of Literature back in 2017. So certainly a very busy man in terms of literary and spreading the love of literacy across the world, certainly here in South Africa. Hi, Darrell. Thanks very much for coming in.
Hi, Nancy.
So is it your belief then that there can never be too many book festivals?
Did you get that question from my wife? Yes, it is my belief that there can never be too many book festivals. I think as long as people schedule the book festivals while consulting with each other, I don't think it's a problem. And I think that it's a good model for small towns and to get them on the tourist map. So that is why you find that a lot of small towns follow this route.
Yes. In fact, literary tourism is quite something that's very big on your radar. I think you studied literary tourism. But just coming back to the literary festival, I actually Googled to find out when the first one was, and I really battled, so I gave up. I thought I would ask you. But literary festivals have been going for a very long time. In your mind, what is their purpose?
Well, I think their purpose is to give a platform to authors, firstly. Secondly, to up-and-coming authors. That is one of their purposes. And then usually book festivals have a literacy component, and that targets schools. So many book festivals, as part of their outreach programs, would have a component for schools. And in many ways, it's meant to motivate people to become writers themselves. And I think from that point of view, book festivals have done a sterling job in South Africa.
So what was your first experience of a book festival? I mean, I say I don't know when the first one started here in South Africa or anywhere indeed, but what was your first experience?
Well, strangely enough, when I organized the first book festival, I had never been to a single book festival my entire life. Never. And people always laugh and they say, well, you know, how did you do it? You know, surely you needed to know what it was like. And my impression is that sometimes it's good to go in cold, because then you are able to stamp your vision of what a book festival should be like onto your festival. And I suppose at the back of my mind, because I was a lecturer, I knew how literary conferences were organized, and I had an idea of what I wanted to do. And so that is how I went into it. And at the time, what people must realize is Franschhoek and Booktown Richmond started in the same year in 2007, I believe. Before that, we had arts festivals, you know, Grahamstown, mainly the university towns, and they would put on arts festivals with a very small component of books. And we changed that. I think between Booktown Richmond, although not on the same scale as Franschhoek, because of our geography, we sort of pretty much in the middle of nowhere. That is what it has done for South Africa. So in 2007. But prior to that, I would think that the most successful book festival prior to that would have been Woordfees at the University of Stellenbosch, But now Woordfeest has become pretty much an arts festival once more, with a large component of books on their program. So it's not purely anymore a literary festival.
I guess, like everything, the literary festival, the face of a literary literally the face of a literary festival is changing as things do. We'll explore literary festivals a little bit more, but you mentioned Booktown Richmond and the Bookbedurna Festival. What is a Booktown?
Okay, so a Booktown, I think most people, if you mention Booktown, they'll be a bit confused, but the minute you mention Heian Wai, then everyone says, aha, okay, we know what's a Booktown. But for people who don't know Heian Wai, it's usually a rural town in the middle of nowhere, and where people decide, okay, we're going to start a book industry in this town. And so what you try and do is you try and open as many bookshops as you can in the town so that you become known as a town of books. Now, I must tell you, when we started this, people all said we were mad, and they laughed, and they said, you know, you're not even a book dorpie, you're a book dorpie key. But it worked a treat. I must tell you, it's been phenomenal. And so in Richmond, we started it off with just three bookshops, which is two better than Heian Wai, because they started with just one bookshop. So we started with three, no funding. This is the thing that you must understand about book towns. There's an element of being a maverick when it comes to book towns. And I just had this vision that this is what I wanted to do. I had no doubt that it had to be in the Karoo. And strangely enough, I traveled literally about 300,000 kilometers looking for this book town in the Karoo. And on my 10th wedding anniversary, my daughter wasn't with us, so we had a bit of free time. And heading back home, I told my wife, you know, we've been to every Karoo town, but we haven't been to Richmond. Let's go in. And so for those people who know Richmond, it's literally just, you just swerve off the highway and then you're back on the highway again. And we drove in, and from the moment I drove in, I told my wife that moment, this is going to be the town. You know, because what you want is, you don't want a too big town where people can't walk around, etc. You want to concentrate everything in a small area so that it gives the sense of everything here is about books. And so that is how we started it. As luck would have it, there were two new faces in town, Peter Baker and John Donaldson. And between the three of us, we said, we're going to do this. Peter Baker was an ex-Canadian vet living in Johannesburg, and John Donaldson was also a person from Johannesburg happening to relocate to Richmond. And slowly but surely, you know, we worked our way until we had about 13 bookshops in the town. But we knew, I sort of knew instinctively, that if you just have bookshops, it wouldn't get people into town on a regular basis. And so when people asked me what next, I instinctively said, well, we've got to do a book festival. And that is how the name, well, I created the name of Bookbedurna. For Afrikaners, they'll sort of know what the word means, but for English speakers, it means crazy about books, but it's got a pejorative connotation, a bit like book befocked. Sorry to say it. I hope it's not a family show. and you know, when we look back at it, many people, when they heard the name Bookbedurna, they said that this is a name that's going to put Richmond on the map. But strangely enough, the church were not enamored with the name. And we had such uphill that I never thought we would get over the name. And we had to get other duomenes, and we had to get literary figures, professors, who had to explain, no, that it doesn't mean what Bedurna really means in Africa. It means crazy about books. And it's a name that stuck. And recently I've seen, for instance, I think people love the name, I've seen in Freya Wiekblad, they've started now a kind of book column, and they call it Bookbedurna. I think I must get in touch with them and get some royalties out of them or free advertising space while I'm thinking about it.
So 13 bookshops in Richmond. Are there still 13? And one has to ask oneself, a man cannot live by bookshops alone. You know, what if you want to get an aspirin or something else, or a loaf of bread? So are all those bookshops sustainable?
Yes and no. So John Donaldson, the way it operates in Richmond is that Peter Baker and myself, we pretty much drive Book Badonnet. And John Donaldson, he settled in Richmond and he drove the bookshops. But John is a good businessman and he knew that you can't rely on foot traffic alone. And so he went online. And a lot of his book sales are online book sales. So he can survive. But remember, the reason why you choose these rural towns is because property is cheap. Rent is cheap. So your overheads are very low. So even though you may make very little money, you will never be bankrupt. And that's the beauty of it. And of course, people who come to Richmond, they don't rent. Most of them buy the properties. And what we've found since the Booktown phenomenon is that more and more people are starting to come into town. I mean, just 3 to 4 years ago, we were shocked. Someone paid close to $3 million for a property. It was one of the finest guest houses that you can imagine. There's another guest house at the entrance to Richmond now. I mean, it is top class, city-like, Cape Town standards. And this is what is happening. You know, it has that regeneration potential in it. And it takes time, unfortunately. You're never going to have change overnight in 3 years, 4 years. It literally took us, I would say, about 7 years before we began to see that critical mass of people coming into the town. And now we are pleasantly surprised to even find like Stellenbosch professors who come to the old age home to retire because they know that Richmond is a kind of cultural hub and there's something for them in the town.
Well, one can only hope that all those guest houses and the bookshops themselves will survive lockdown. You know, people have just not been able to move around.
Yeah.
But one of the good things about lockdown, I guess, is a lot of people are reading.
Yes.
Which brings us back to this mother of all book festivals.
Yeah.
But before we do, let's just talk a little bit about the face of literary festivals, because that in itself has been controversial, as you will know only too well.
Yes.
You talk about professors moving to Richmond. One thinks in terms of Franschhoek. There was a lot of controversy a few years ago about everybody was white and old and white-haired, et cetera, academic. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't for the people.
Yes.
And you yourself are an Afrikaans lecturer. We're looking at English books, Afrikaans book, is it Xhosa books, Zulu books. The objective is to try and get a literary festival that reflects the face of all South Africans. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling on that?
Yeah. You know, if you look at my track record, I was well aware of these debates. And so therefore, you know, for instance, I started the first book festival in Soweto. Interestingly enough, I got written out of history. If you go and check that out, they don't have Darryl David started the first book festival. So there is a sense of it was very difficult to continue with the second book festival in Soweto. But I was aware that you must reach out, and that was my objective with a festival like Soweto, with the isiZulu Literary Museum. There again, I thought it was a wonderful idea, and many people thought so. But then you began to get the sense that maybe people at NALM and Grahamstown weren't too happy because they were also trying to create a South African literary museum rather than an English literary museum. So every step of the way you try and change the face of literature. What we do in Richmond that is very unique, and it's sort of my model, is that we don't charge entrance fees. All our talks are completely free. So in a sense, we do not get the same criticism as Franschhoek because the festival is free and open to everyone. There's no barriers. It's not like tickets cost 150 rand and then if you want to attend 10 talks, it's going to set you back 1,500. What we found in Richmond is that it has helped the town and it has helped tourism. And you've got to grow tourism in a small town in order to create employment. That is what we've found in Richmond. So I think that the face of South African literature is changing. But sadly, I think that the people who try and change it, they are well-intentioned. But South African literary festivals are in a bad space at the moment. It's racially divided. It's a place of hatred. You know, people are almost scared to put on book festivals for fear of criticism, etc. And that was my thinking in starting the Madiba Land Book World Literary Festival, or Madiba Land Book Festival. I wanted to create a book festival that symbolized inclusiveness rather than excluding people. Listeners may not know, but you know, I've been very vocal in my criticism of the Ubuntu Book Festival, which openly states that they will only allow black writers and black audience members. And to me, this is ridiculous. I've openly said it, but you are politically incorrect if you mention things like this. And I'm not liked by all the people who are involved in the Ubuntu Book Festival because I, time and again, I criticize them for it. And I say, if I went to Richmond and I said, Richmond is predominantly an Afrikaner town and so we must only have Afrikaans books, what would people say? People would say, I'm a racist. So why does that argument count for one sector of the society and not for another? And so I began to get very disillusioned. In fact, I was even thinking about maybe I should move away from book festivals, and that is why I created the UNESCO City of Gastronomy in Hermanus. Because, you know, it's a difficult space to be in when you try and do something good, but people criticize you based on your skin color or your race. And with this Madiba Land, I wanted to break those boundaries down. After a while, you know, I'm a bit stubborn. That is why I kept donkeys for so many years. I learned stubbornness from donkeys. And you've got to be determined to change the face of South African literature. So in a way, the Ubuntu Book Festival and many book festivals are becoming very insular. And I wanted to go outward. I wanted to reach out to all races, all languages, and I wanted to go international. Because sometimes you get so caught up in the debates in your own country that you don't realize that there's a world out there. And I must tell you, I've been so excited, but I've also been disappointed with my experiences with the Madiba Land Festival. I can literally count on my hand, one hand, the rejections I got from international writers. I mean, I didn't have a logo. I had no funding. I literally had a vision. And I went overseas and I said, this is the vision. And I hardly got a rejection. Most people who came, they said, what a wonderful idea. I've got a list longer than 2 pages of South African authors that I approached. Up to today, no answer. But I must say that if you look at the program, it really is the who's who of South African and world literature. And you've got to make a start somewhere. You can't be disillusioned by these kind of things. You know, when we started Booktown Richmond, I always remember the motto, build it and they will come. That is how we built Booktown Richmond. And we in Booktown Richmond, we say you can't create change overnight and you can't create change artificially. And so you find that, you know, many book festivals with big budgets, what they try and do is they try and make sure that they are politically correct and they tick boxes. You know, I must tell you that when I organized the book festival in Durban on the brink of us getting the UNESCO City of Literature, I was shocked when I had to sit down with city councillors and they literally had like 12 columns: gay, queer, black, white, coloured. And I said, my God, you know, I'm trying to create a UNESCO City of Literature here. And is this what it's all about? And that is why, you know, it broke my heart. I had to step away from Durban because the politics, I call it a politics of hatred. That is what it is, you know, and I understand that you've got to be inclusive, etc. But when you go to that level to organize a bookshop, a book festival, sorry, it takes all the joy out of literature, out of a festival.
Let's move back to the politics of reading and the politics of the purpose of a literary festival. And it seems to be such an ideal way of bringing people together to share one another's stories, to listen to what it is that everybody is reading and writing about, which it seems like such a good idea. However, in the middle of all this, there's a global pandemic, which means that people are not moving around. They are reading books, hopefully, touch wood, but they're not able to get to these places. So I'm assuming that the Madibaland Book Festival is going to be online?
Yes, the Madibaland Book Festival is going to be fully online. And that was the vision that I had because we started having meetings on Zoom and Google Meet, etc. I began to think during these meetings, which aren't the most inspiring things to be in, you know, maybe a book festival like this, and I think it struck a nerve with people. And people were aching for something because there was a sense that the world might come to an end around about March and April this year. That feeling, that sense is slowly dissipating. But that is what I think, that is why the international community bought into the idea.
So your plan then is to have authors from all around the world talking about their books with facilitators. In some cases, sort of pairing them together. And I think you've got an extensive list, as you say, a bit of a who's who. So people can have a look, and I think that the website for that is richmondnc.co.za.
That's it, yeah.
So if you want to see the program for the Madibaland World Literary Festival, richmondnc.co.za.
Yeah.
But I have to ask you, your involvement with the University of the Western Cape is that you are now a lecturer there in the Faculty of Education. What has their involvement been, and were they very supportive of this whole idea?
You know, I must say, when I came to Cape Town, I really didn't know if I had made the right decision. You know, when you come to a place after living 49 years of your life in another place where you were born, it's a difficult move to make. And, you know, my dean has been so supportive. Any idea, Daryl, you must work with us, which was very different from UKZN. And initially, when I came to UWC, I would keep it to myself because that is what I was sort of taught to do. And she would always say, but Daryl, this is valuable work, you know, for a faculty of education. This is something that we would like to get involved in. And when I told her the idea, I mean, literally within minutes, she was on the email, on phone to everyone.
And who is she? What's her name?
It's Prof. Vuyo Nomlomo. She is my dean. And my head of school is Prof. Day Mbalani. Between the two of them, they've been very supportive of these initiatives. And I think that for a faculty of education, it's a wonderful fit for a faculty of education, especially because we work with the horrors of a school system that people claim is dysfunctional, that children can't read, etc. And so book festivals offer us, especially within a faculty of education, to reach out to communities and to inspire children. And I remember when I came in my first semester at UWC, you know, we were teaching narrative. And usually when people teach narrative, they teach it as theory. And I remember thinking, you know, the one thing that gets people to write is something that's close to them, something like love or pain. And I remember giving it to students, and I remember many of them went and complained to the very same dean that this new lecturer is upsetting the apple cart, and why is he giving us things like this to write? But I tell you, the stories that came out of that class and our students will open this festival. And it's not being, you know, condescending or because it's a UWC event. I would never put students in a situation like this where I felt their stories were not up to standard. But I'm telling you, if you come and listen to the first session of the Madiba Land Book Festival, you will be surprised at what students can do, third-year students, students who've never taken English or a language. When the spirit moves people, great things can be achieved. And I think that for those of us who've been doing book festivals for a long time, I always tell people, I don't need to know how many copies a book sold or what has been written about a book. If I listen to an author and if the hairs on my hand stand up, I know that it's a great book. Something biologically tells me. Maybe I've got a sixth sense, but you find that most people who've been to many book festivals, if you ask them, what has been the highlights for you? They can literally name it, because there are those few moments that change you forever.
Indeed. And Daryl, what about you as a writer? Because I think that the hairs on your arms have stood up for all sorts of things. You're a very somebody who is very passionate about many things.
Yeah.
And I think that you've written several books on churches.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So even before, I mean, I never even had the dream from an early age to create a book town and book festivals. It was not part of my vision. My dream was always to do a book on churches. And I knew instinctively, I went out and I searched. You know, in those days, we had wonderful secondhand bookstores in Pietermaritzburg. The secondhand bookshops are my great love because they're such a threatened species and you get such beautiful books in these bookstores. And so I knew that there wasn't a book like this. You know, there had been one or two that had covered maybe 10 Anglican churches or 10 Methodist churches, but there wasn't a book that broke down those boundaries between denominations. And because of my travel, you know, I'm a great traveler. I always tell people my great loves are literature and travel. And I knew that there's great churches out there and no one had documented it. And, you know, it's so strange. I had tried for so many years, but I could never call a book Churches of South Africa because, like Peyton, I always believe, you know, Gauteng is a land without mountain and sea. So I never visited. And so I couldn't get enough churches. But after I started the book town, you would not believe it. A total stranger wrote to me and said they loved my article announcing the book town and could they meet me? And so I said, oh, wonderful. I'll meet. He said he was on holiday in Durban. And at that time, I was lecturing in Durban. And so we met, and we were talking about book town, etc. And then he said, you know, my great hobby is taking photographs of churches. And you see, sometimes you got to believe that there's a greater force at play, you know. And that's the beauty of book festivals. You hear time and again, it's not the great books that have been through the hands of numerous copywriters and publishers, etc. It is these kind of books when the penny drops and people realize that maybe this book was sort of God-ordained. I don't want to use that phrase loosely. But, you know, that is why... okay, I'll get back to that. But so that is how we started, the two of us. And we did three books on churches of South Africa. And I always tell people one day when I retire, I will realize that is most probably the greatest thing that I've done. I don't sense it now because you're always involved in book festivals and your life is so busy and you're always plotting who to invite to the next book festival that you don't have time to reflect on your own life. But I know, I mean, it's been about over 10 years and no one has come close. I think in three books we've covered close on to 400 churches of South Africa. And in my last book, for instance, one of the great things that I wanted to do was I wanted to foreground the Trappist missions of KwaZulu-Natal. Great, great churches. And after we did that third book, someone actually went and did a book just on Trappist missions of KwaZulu-Natal. So those are the three books. I've got a great list of things that I want to do. I always tell people I had a vision when I was very young that I would die at 55. So I've got about 4 years left. That is why I'm quite a driven person. I don't normally believe in superstition, but I always tell people every person in that dream who I dreamt would die, they basically croaked. I'm the only one standing. And so I'm quite driven to achieve everything that I set out to achieve. And next year, I'm coming out with a book on my travels with dogs. Now that, I mean, I've already got orders for that book.
I have to say, Darryl, you are unstoppable. Prolific and unstoppable. And may the force be with you. I'm going to, if anybody would like to know more about the Madibaland World Literary Festival, once again, check the website, which is richmondnc.co.za.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That is absolutely right. And Nancy, thank you so much for having me here. And one more thing that we didn't mention, that we run the South African Independent Publishers Awards, which is probably the only competition for self-published books in South Africa. Because we realized that because of our geography, we don't get the mainstream authors willing to travel 1,000 kilometers. But for authors who self-publish, who will never publish another book, this is something, it has become such a highlight in Richmond. So for people who've self-published, go to that website, get our details, and we always promise that we'll put on a good party for the winners every year.
The unstoppable Darryl Earl David. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy.